So, well, first, I would just ask you to introduce yourself and what position you hold here in Waco.
I'm Malcolm Duncan Jr., and I was recently sworn in as mayor May 22nd of this year. So I'm pretty new to the job, but I'm a lifelong resident of Waco.
Yeah. And how's the first week going so far? Is it a big transition from being a city council member?
It is. It is. There's just all these things that are you're expected to do, and everybody wants a little piece of you. And I've just got that much to go around, but it's really exciting. I've had a very good reception, and I'm looking forward to it.
So I guess I'm going to start kind of back at the beginning of how you first got interested in running for office. So I know that your father was mayor. So can you talk a little bit about what it was like having your father as mayor, and did that shape your interest in becoming mayor eventually yourself, or your civic engagement?
Sure, I think it was. I think we were raised with the understanding that you made a good living in a community and you needed to give back of some kind or another. And so it was, I wouldn't say it was expected, but it was instilled.
Yeah. And what do you think shaped as an adult? You know, you were on a number of boards and then were eventually appointed to the city council position vacated by Jim Bush, and then also ran for mayor after that. So can you talk a little bit about that transition from, you know, being involved in the community, being on the boards of different organizations, to actually wanting to hold a position in city government?
Well, I think the more experience you have working in a community and working in a business, the more qualified you are, and the longer your term of doing that, the more qualified you are. So I felt like I was qualified, and the timing was right. I didn't know it was going to be this quick that I would be running for mayor, but I'd always expected to do that if the opportunity arose. So I think it's just something you grow into.
And what's the experience, you know, from being appointed to the city council seat to then having to campaign for mayor? What was that experience of campaigning like for you?
Other than miserable, I had a very good campaign. I had a very good opponent who was, we talked before the campaign and agreed to run a clean and ethical campaign. We both signed the state form that said we were going to do that. And campaigning is just takes you out of your normal day-to-day mode. You've got to always be making appearances, making speeches, and while you don't change your point of view, you've got to make sure that you keep everybody informed of what's important to them. And so you're talking about a lot of different issues over a very short period of time, and it's very intense. It really does take away from what you do during a normal workday.
And do you feel like, you know, you already have been in Waco for so long and very involved in the community, but through the campaign process, do you think you learned anything else, anything new about Waco?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I learned how to count precincts and where people vote. I always knew that the district I represented had the highest percentage voting participation in the city, but I was surprised at how well I did in other parts of the city just by reaching out to different constituencies and different leaders in those communities. And it was very rewarding to see support all across the community from people that did not know me but knew somebody I knew who would support me.
And okay, so now we're going to get more into like the issues in Waco. And I guess, well, actually taking one step back, for people, so for this local election, overall there was fairly low voter turnout. I think they said of
Six point 2 or 3%.
Yeah, which to me makes me think that maybe people don't understand the role that local government plays in their daily life. So do you think, can you go into like the nuts and bolts of what it means to be mayor in Waco? You know, what are your responsibilities as mayor here in the city of Waco?
Oh my gosh, and we've got 30 minutes? Well, I think the first responsibility is to the council. The council are the elected representatives of their districts, of the people. However small a number that was that voted, they voted. And as my colleague Randy Riggs said when he left office, you get the government you vote for. So the people that voted got these representatives, and I feel my first obligation to bring them around the table, have the discussion, and see if we can't agree on the major issues. And I feel very encouraged about the makeup of this council. We recently appointed someone to replace me, who I've known a long time. District 3 has a new representative who's young, and I've known him a good while, and he's very experienced in the business world, and I think we've got a great council to work with. So my first obligation is to the council. The citizens at large elected me, so I have a responsibility to the whole community. I think I speak for all the citizens when I have to speak, and so that's a responsibility. I think there's a bigger part of it that is not public. It is public in that we're transparent and we're open government, but the work on the government, the work on the budget, the work on the different employees that we have. We only have four direct employees, the city attorney, the city secretary, the city manager, and our municipal judge. So we have to be very engaged with those four people and work through them to manage their departments. We cannot get involved directly with their departments, but I take a very broad view of policy discussions with all those four people. So that's important. And, you know, public appearances, people expect a mayor to be much more visible and to be more of a spokesman for the community than a district representative. When I was a district representative, I would get asked to go make presentations, read proclamations in my district. If somebody else wasn't available, then I would go. As mayor pro tem last year, I went whenever the mayor couldn't go. So I had a pretty good dose of it, and I think there'll be even more this year. But every time I go to one of those, even though I say I don't like them, I find out there are so many good things going on in our community that it's very rewarding.
And for people, including myself, who I'm new to Waco, so when you talk about you have the four city government employees, city manager, the municipal judge, the city attorney, and the city secretary, and then you also have the mayor and the city council, where do those meet? You know, what are they each working on?
Read the charter.
Okay.
We had a council orientation for our two new council members yesterday, and we discussed the importance of our city charter. We revised it, I think, in the mid-90s. Or maybe it was the 80s. But anyway, the charter looks like a very simple little document or pamphlet, and it exactly spells out what we as a council, as a mayor, are supposed to be doing, what the staff is responsible for. The council, according to the charter, has those four employees and deals only in policy. We do not deal in the day-to-day operations of the departments, even of those four employees. We can only discuss policy with our four employees. So our first responsibility is to honor the charter.
And then, so now moving to issues in Waco and policy issues, what are the major issues facing Waco in your view? And it can be both the strengths that you see developing in Waco and the position of Waco right now in terms of the benefits of being here, things of that nature, but also what are the improvements that you feel the city has to make?
I think policy issues, like you say, can be divided into strengths and weaknesses or opportunities and challenges. And our legacy of leadership has provided us with a real continuum of important policy goals. Take Mayor Dupuy's focus on the Education Alliance. That's up and going. They now have full-time employees. She's devoted a good part of her life to getting that going, and I wholly support it and endorse it. And I think our recent work on the Poverty Solutions Task Force ties in directly with her work in education. I mean, education is such a vital part in getting out of poverty. I think previous mayor's work on economic development ties into that. Reducing poverty is an act of economic development, and that somebody's got to have a job to get out of poverty. I think we're very close to receiving the recommendations of that group. The Poverty Solutions Steering Committee has been working since I've been on council, 2 years, and I believe we'll get their recommendations at our next council work session the 19th of this month, and that's going to be a big document. We are going to take that document and actually put it into action, and that's going to be really a matter of drawing the whole community into this. It can't just be the city. It can't be done through our boards and commissions. We've got to have the employers, the health providers, the educators, and the government, all the nonprofit agencies. It's going to be a big task, but I think we've got a very good start. In terms of some of the more enduring things, we were at our TIF, which is a Tax Increment Finance District Board meeting yesterday, visiting with the board. That was started in 1982, so it's 30 years old this year. We only have 10 more years to run, and if you look at the first 25 years, there was hardly any development to reinvest. But we now have such momentum and strength in that core, in that zone. The proposed Baylor Stadium is in that zone. It goes all up and down both banks of the river, down Elm Avenue, up Austin Avenue. We're generating $5 million a year in funds that we can reinvest in that zone, which is – that's a great accomplishment, but it's taken 30 years to get there. So we're going to need to continue that work. It's just gradual. I think if you talk about visioning, our vision is the same today as it was then. We're just continuing to build on our strengths, and it's piece by piece, step by step.
And this might be jumping ahead because if you're getting the recommendations of the committee on the 19th, but you did mention during one of the debates that addressing poverty is going to be one of the central goals of your time as mayor. And I'm wondering what sort of things can you pragmatically do as mayor to help address that? Is it playing the role of bringing together different community partners? Are there specific policy decisions you can make and implement in terms of addressing poverty?
I think the mayor is it's one vote on the council. It's more of a bully pulpit than it is anything else. So yes, as the mayor, I should have the ability to convene this larger group of people to get them involved. I think in terms of policy, we'll be able to work with our city budget to allocate some funds to keep this effort ongoing. But I think more than anything, it's the focus at the city level that we use to bring all of the players to the table.
Because I think that's something that's interesting to me about Waco is that overall there's a low unemployment rate. However, there's a very high poverty rate. And so I wonder, have you seen, is it like a lack of good jobs, or a lot of times unemployment rates don't account for higher unemployment rates in certain communities versus others?
There are so many different ways to measure unemployment. There's a U19 that's a different measure, and nationally that's about 18 or 19%. That's people, you know, at risk or under a certain age without a certain amount of education. 6.2 or 6.6 is what our recent number was. There are a lot of people that stopped looking for work that aren't counted in there anymore. So I think if you accept the fact that we have anywhere from 25 to 30% of our population living in poverty – and poverty is defined at a very low threshold by the government. It's barely a living wage. It's not a living wage. I think one of the recommendations of this committee is it's going to be 200% of poverty guidelines is our reaching out point where you're not considered in poverty. So actually you have to make twice the income that the government says of a poverty level to be self-sufficient. I think it's a combination of things, but I think the focus in our economic development over the last 20 years has been on higher-paying jobs with better benefits. And there's nothing wrong with that, but at some point we have to say to get out of poverty, you can't go from being in poverty to being one of those higher-paid people with job benefits, with all the benefits of health insurance and 401k. Without something in between. And I think we can help. We've already added some changed some of the language to our tax abatement ordinance, which allows us to reach out and include smaller businesses at lower paying levels to just create jobs. I think we need to be very purposeful about just creating jobs and not worry too much about how much they're paying or what the benefits are.
And you've mentioned or we've been talking about economic development, and also a part of that is going to be the new Baylor Stadium potentially. Can you talk about some of the opportunities you see for development going forward and some of the impact of those developments?
I think you saw one in the paper this week. There's the proposed hotel. That's really been proposed for 4 years, but because of the stadium, it's gaining a lot more momentum. I think once the stadium is finally announced as being a go, I think you'll see a lot more riverfront development in terms of entertainment, restaurants, and residential units, more of a mixed-use type of development. And I think it really is finally going to be the catalyst for developing both sides of the river. I don't think there'll be any way that the east side of the river escapes the benefits of development like it has in the past. And that's a really big deal to us as a city, as a community, and as a council.
And do you have a vision for how you would like to see it develop?
Well, vision is going to be to me defined by the length of my term. And in two or 4 years, however long I'm mayor, I would hope that we have the opportunity to make the decisions about what is the best use of that land. What is the best use of the incentives that we have? Who are our best partners to go forward with that? And if we can get there in 2 or 4 years to make some announcements about groundbreakings and developments, I'll be very pleased. I think we've got a tremendous luxury in that the city owns a good bit of land, and so we will be in control – not in control, but we'll have a meaningful place at the table when we talk about how the riverfront develops. And because of our – the funds available in our tax increment zone, we'll be able to bring some meaningful incentives to the development.
And I think at one of the debates as well, there were members of the community that from where the stadium may be developed and located, and clearly there's some anxiety about how having a stadium in their neighborhood may impact the overall quality of life there or their ability to continue to live there. So do you see a need as mayor to reach out to people who are going to be living in these areas where development may be occurring and who might not have the same kind of voice in that process because they're not necessarily owning that land? And
I've talked to several landowners there. I've talked to Reagan Ramsauer, is the vice president of finance at Baylor, who has met with the neighborhood association. I've offered to go meet with them, and they didn't want to talk to me. Then they didn't have a need to, but Reagan has met with them and assured them they do have a stake, because if you look at where the stadium is and where the brick is, they're clearly in the path of development, and they can't be left out of that discussion. So I fully intend for them to be a partner or to be at least a meaningful part of the discussion in how that develops. But I've not seen anything that would give me concern about them being overrun or the price of property run up to the extent that they couldn't afford to live there. If you look at the parking plans for the new stadium, it's only 2,500 places. The plan is not to generate so much traffic that it destroys that neighborhood. The plan is to have mass transit and for people to park in other places. And the quality of the neighborhood can only strengthen when you put a $250 million development in it. I think they would all agree with that.
And let's see. I must return to my questions. Okay. So, one thing that is interesting to me is, so you're currently the president of Duncan Motors. And often, I feel like I see a difference between obviously local politics and national politics, and that I think there's a little more nuance in local politics. But in national politics, even with the presidential campaign right now, we see a division between business people and bureaucrats, and people don't want to be identified as bureaucrats. People seem more like to desire being identified as a business person and what sort of like the fresh air and breath of fresh air they can bring with them to government. I think Mitt Romney is a good example of that. So I'm wondering, because you are both a business person and you're also involved in city government, how does sort of being a part of both of those worlds, both being a part of public office, like a public sector and the private sector, influence you in either of those areas?
Well, I think my business background is a big part of my ability to do what I do. I think everybody on the council has different backgrounds and we have different voices and different strengths. But I think because of my experience in business, I have a different view of value and economic stability and budgeting that I think there are people in Congress that do that, but the biggest difference is that we're not partisan. A council of six people, we can all be three and three, Democrat or Republican, or we could be four independents, and it doesn't matter. When we come to the table to talk about what's important for our community, politics is put aside. There may be politics in how we get to a vote. There may be politics in how you get elected. But when we sit around the table and discuss the issues that are important, we don't have any allegiance to anybody but the citizens of Waco. And that's critical. We would, I don't think I'm speaking out of place, but I don't think any of us would be there if we had to do that.
And why is it important to you to be, you know, to hold this role in Waco, you know, having grown up here? Like, what is it – why do you want to serve the community in this way?
Because I think I can make a difference. I think we all want to make a difference, and I think by working together we do make a difference. But I don't think I could live here having the opportunity to do this and feel like I'd completed my mission without doing this job.
And I feel like, I mean, much of our conversation has talked about this, so this might be retreading a little bit when you talk about, you know, that desire to make a difference. You know, what are the things, if you could, would you like to either set in motion in the next 2 years or see accomplished? Like, what are the changes that you would – I mean, what change would be maybe the most important to you?
I think, like I told you, it's 2 to 4 years. It's such incremental change. I think if I can continue to build on the legacy of the former mayors, there's so many good things already put in place that I would measure my success in terms of just incremental improvements. If we're now reaping the benefits of 30 years of investment in downtown – you know, in 2 to 4 years, are we going to make a big difference? I don't know, but we're going to make a difference, and we're going in the right direction. If I can keep it on that path that we've so well established, then I'll feel good about it.
Yeah, definitely. And let's see. I think those are all my questions. I think I have one question that is kind of silly, but it's just that, are there things about Waco city government that you think people might not know, or ways in which – what are ways that other people listening might be able to get involved in city government beyond just voting?
It's amazing to me at how open we are, at how much we work at being open and transparent, and how many people think we're not. And it is – by law, we are open, and we are happy to have that law, and we embrace the Act, the Open Meetings Act, the Public Information Act. And I think there are more resources for people on our website and different websites in the community to find out what's going on, that people can know everything we do. Our agenda's posted, all our minutes are posted, all our actions are posted. The meetings are posted ahead of time, so there's no secret meetings. There's nobody getting around in a back room deciding what's going to happen. It's all a very public process. And I think there's over the summer we go through a appointment process for our various boards and commissions. We have, I don't know how many, hundreds of people serving on boards and commissions that the council appoints. And we don't appoint them if they don't put an application in. And the only way they can get that is to go to the city secretary's office or go to her website. It lists all of the boards and commissions. And it really is the best way to gain an insight into how government works, because we rely on the reports and the information we get from those boards and commissions to do our job.
And why do you think people might have the sense that city government isn't open if there is this effort to actually be very transparent?
It's education. Education and communication. And if you want to know, the information's out there. So you just have to take a little initiative and go find it. I spend more time doing research than I do going to meetings. And it's been that way before I went on the council.
And can I ask another question in terms of people getting appointed? And I think clearly, like, a city council seat, people have a longer history. And so, for example, Kyle Deaver, who is just appointed, he has a long history of also serving on community boards and being very involved in the community, has a law practice here. For other people in the community who might be interested in getting involved or holding or being appointed to different positions, but perhaps they haven't been in a role to be on the boards of different organizations or had the time to do those kind of things, but maybe they've been involved in their local church or they volunteer with a nonprofit organization. What are ways that other community members in Waco might be able to get the kind of visibility or recognition to potentially be in those kind of positions without having had to serve so visibly in the community? I mean, is that possible?
Absolutely. If you will look at that webpage that has the boards and commissions, we make those appointments to people that put in applications, and the only requirement is they're a resident and they don't have a record of a felony, a criminal record. So we're not overly selective when we make those appointments, and we have a lot of positions that go open because we don't have enough applications. So it's very easy to become involved.
So how many – so you said there's hundreds of positions?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
For some of them, like the plan commission is probably the most difficult appointment. I've not been able to appoint anybody because they've been so long serving. But it's a 3-year term. You're normally reappointed, so that's a 6-year commitment. There's others that are equally important, like the building standards commissions, where all the properties that are red tagged or green tagged have a public hearing. And the commissioners sit and listen to the evidence and make recommendations, and it's vitally important. But that's a 2-year appointment, and that's probably one of the hardest jobs we have. Animal welfare board. Everybody wants to be on the animal welfare board, and the people that are on it aren't really happy. It's just a tough job. There's animal grievance, where you hear the complaints from neighbors that have an offending animal next door or some sort of problem with an animal. We've got an airport board. We've got the tax increment board. We've got so many boards that I can't name them all. And we are not overly discriminating in how you get appointed. Mainly the council members appoint people from their district. Hmm. So if you have an interest in one, pick up the phone and call your council member or send them an email. We're all our websites are on the city's webpage. We have our phone numbers and you can email us directly from that page.
And so do you think at all, I mean, to the extent that it's possible, because clearly there's a lot of other demands on time, but do you think as mayor, are you going to be interested in all and show like in demonstrating the kind of accessibility that people have to city government? Because it sounds like it's pretty accessible to get involved and that people might not know. I mean, do you see that as part of your
Tell me how I would do that.
Yeah, that's a good question. Hopefully things like this where people hear that there's hundreds of positions open.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's much more open than
– We put it in our water bill. We preach to it in our neighborhood associations. That's another place people can get involved. We put a tremendous value and importance to neighborhood associations. If we get a comment or a complaint or a suggestion from a neighborhood association, it carries so much more weight than just an individual citizen because it's a group that cares about a larger constituency. It's a bigger group. And we've got some neighborhoods that aren't served by active neighborhood associations that we will help you get one organized. We have staff that works for the city full-time to work with neighborhood associations. We'll give you an annual stipend to help with your mailings or anything else. We want to encourage neighborhood involvement and neighborhood voice, and that is the very grassroots of our city government.
So I think those are all. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No. Thank you, NPR, and thank you, KWBU.